Would you like to accelerate your career and reach your full potential in just minutes a day? Welcome to the LeadX Show with New York Times bestselling author and Inc. 500 entrepreneur, Kevin Cruz.
Hey everyone, Kevin Cruz here. Welcome to the weekly wrap-up edition of the LeadX Leadership Show. Still the smartest way to start your day. Today, I'm coming to you from the greatest city in the world. Of course, that being Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, home to Ben Franklin, Rocky Balboa, and Joel Embiid. Although our friend Joel has not been playing for the Sixers practically all week because of a bad back. And when he's not on the floor, they ain't playing so well. But I digress. We are only a couple of days away from New Year's Eve and New Year's Day. Are you making your resolutions? Are you making your goals? Unfortunately, so many of us make New Year's resolutions, and after a month or two, there's only like 10 or 20% of us that are still pursuing those goals, still hitting the gym, still on that diet, still working on that novel, whatever your thing is. I've written, I guess, 2 years in a row now. You could Google around for this. I interviewed Dr. Paul Marciano, a behavioral psychologist from Yale, and he gives tips for how to stick to your New Year's resolutions. And I'm not going to be able to recite them all right now, but you know, big ones are to be realistic, to go slow, don't overdo it. A buddy plan, an accountability partner is key, especially for weight loss stuff. It's easier to meet up with a friend in the park to go jogging than to get yourself to go every day. It's amazing how quickly we will kind of break a commitment to ourselves, and yet we are far less likely to break a commitment to a friend or neighbor, or family member. And I know Dr. Paul often says, like, be gentle with ourselves. It's okay to fail. Like, it's not all or nothing. And people will think, oh, you know, I ate that donut at work, I might as well just blow off the rest of the day and eat pizza for lunch and double up on desserts for dinner. No, we will have missteps, mistakes, and we just brush ourselves off and recommit to the goal and keep going after it. But anyway, good luck to you with whatever goal you have in mind. Personally, I've never been more excited about my future year. I mean, business-wise, as you know, if you've been a listener to the show or familiar with my work, you know, I've built and sold several multi-million dollar companies, failed at a few as well, but I've never been more excited about the year ahead for LeadX. We've just finished our first year, primarily have been working in stealth mode. We have, if you go to leadx.org, we are offering our free courses of the day. And of course, for a modest pre-launch fee, you can get 1 year access to the LeadX Academy. But basically, we're not even officially launched. We're in what we would consider public beta, just getting the kinks worked out, getting some feedback, building up our course library. And I just finished, well, I finished filming, but the crew finished producing a new course from individual contributor to first-time manager and how to give effective feedback. And I love it. It's a much more modern style, not the sage on the stage approach that lynda.com and Creative Live and Skillsoft and all the others have used and that we've used a lot. It's a much more kind of Vice News, Casey Neistat style with some jump cuts and some imagery, you know, online. Just the pacing is much more modern. I'm digging it. And we'll launch those as free courses in the near future. And just in the next couple of weeks, I'm working on another course script on how to do effective one-on-one meetings. And Tara has already completed scripts and will now go into video production on effective business writing, business grammar, effective business email. We're shooting all those videos in January. Hopefully we will be launching those in February. So a lot of good stuff to come, but if you haven't visited us in a while, go to leadx.org. Again, over 30 courses, almost 100 separate videos. And just in the last 30 days, we've added 100 executive book summaries from our partner, Get Abstract, and 5 new webinars into the archive, including a presentation from Dr. Stan Beecham. We've got from Dr. Andy Malinsky. If you're not outside your comfort zone, you won't learn anything. And Paul Axtell, How to Do Extraordinary Meetings, How to Hire with Scott Winthrop, and yours truly. I think this was our most popular webinar of the year. I taught how to become a Forbes writer, and it's really how to write for Forbes or Inc. or Huffington Post. And I even give a, it's kind of a sneaky way to get you covered by the Forbes writers. If you don't want to write for Forbes or Inc. yourself, there's kind of a tricky way that you can get them to write about you, and you get that exposure. You get to put that logo on your website, all that good stuff. If you're a solopreneur, for example, you get all this stuff for, it's like ridiculous. It's like $7 a month. I'm not even joking about that, because we're in public beta, pre-launch price, subscribe for a year. It's like, you know what, 1.5 Starbucks runs or something. I don't even know. Anyway, leadx.org, lots of exciting stuff coming up. Hey, let's hit the review of the week. And I want to thank all the people, you know, that have left reviews in the last few days. Strucker, or is it Struckers with a Z? J.S. Bronca, UN Village Francais, Watchet, and Diana SME. All of them have left reviews in the last week. And that's the number one favor you can do for me, is just go leave a rating on iTunes. If you don't want to write any words, still, it's helpful. Just go there, look for the LeadX show, L-E-A-D-X, just search on LeadX, it'll come up, and then click some stars, 4 stars, 5 stars, however many you think the show deserves. That helps to position us higher in the search engines and the search results. We build our family that way. And so the review of the week, I'm going to pick J.S. Bronca, who wrote, "Thank you, Kevin. Your show has given me so many great ideas that have helped me become a better leader in and outside of work." And that is the message. Thanks, J.S. Bronca. And because I read your review online, J.S. Bronca, email us at info@leadx.org. And we're going to send you, cool LeadX mug or t-shirt, something like that. And all of you, if you've left a review for the LeadX show, let us know and we will invite you into the Ambassador Program. It's a private VIP program, VIP group on Facebook. That's where we run it. And I'm always asking questions and we're sharing things with each other. And sometimes we do contests. We send out a ton of books. I think most recently that ambassador group is helping me to name the my next book, which comes out in 2018. And if we actually use one of the titles, I'm going to pay to fly that person into Philadelphia for the book launch. So we have a lot of fun. Go leave a review and then just let us know and we'll invite you into that program. Now, my rant of the day, it is a rant. It's not a real happy topic, but it needs to be said. In today's news, top of the headline on the New York Times, CNN, and other places, life expectancy in the United States has gone down for the second year in a row. Now, this is pretty shocking, right? So in developed countries, well, heck, in all countries, even less developed countries, year after year, life expectancy goes up as we continue to make progress against diseases like cancer and reduce infant fatalities, all kinds of stuff. We're going down in the United States. 2 years in a row, they're predicting it will be a third year in a row, which hasn't happened in 100 years. And there's a variety of reasons, but the number one reason is the opioid epidemic. Drug overdoses, people killing themselves from accidental heroin overdoses, has become a public health crisis. I mean, it is rampant in the United States. It's most acute in impoverished regions where despair and joblessness are high, but this is not a lower class, a socioeconomic class condition. It's hitting wealthy communities, middle-class communities. It's hitting everybody. And so far, we're not doing a very good job responding to it, I think, on a local level, or certainly not on a state or even national level. I think I even mentioned this in a show that a friend I was out to dinner with, and she runs a very large social welfare agency, government agency. They take care of the homeless and all kinds of programs. And when I asked her, I said, "Is everything pretty well covered, or could you use additional resources? Or how would you use additional resources?" And she thought for just a moment and then said, "The heroin addiction crisis, the heroin overdose crisis is not being addressed adequately. She needs more money, more resources for that. This is actually nationwide. What can I do locally? When I read this article today about the epidemic and how it's actually reducing life expectancy in the United States, I decided tonight when I sit down with my three teenagers at dinner, I'm going to tell them about this article, tell them about this news, and I'm going to tell them again, because I've already brought it up, I'm going to tell them again that, look, if they're out with their friends at a high school party and they end up drinking a beer or even smoking a joint, I'm not going to be thrilled about it if I find out. But compared to heroin, compared to pop and painkiller pills, I really don't care that much about pot and alcohol. Drunk driving is a different story, but heroin is the big danger right now, especially among teens. Heroin can be smoked, it can be snorted, and of course it can be injected. And my message to my kids are, this is a whole different thing than having a drink or smoking pot at a high school party. And if they're ever around heroin, they need to get away, like treat it like a rattlesnake. If they see kids using it, if they're ever offered it, if it's around, they've got to leave. Treat it like a rattlesnake and get the hell away. All you parents out there, I urge you, you're going to have some extra family time during this holidays, not to bring everybody down on the holiday themselves, but find a quiet time over breakfast, over dinner, sometime over the next couple of weeks, and talk about this epidemic with your kids. All right, so let's shift gears. Let's take some questions. And this week, Marcelo Reda sent me questions about entrepreneurship. Three questions, actually. He says, how do you develop a company mission statement? How do you decide what values and culture your business should have? And how do you develop a business plan? Now, these are all pretty big topics, and I'll answer. These will be the only questions I answer on today's show, but I'll try to spin them a little bit in a way that can apply to really everyday life as well. And I'll get back to productivity and leadership questions, you know, starting with next Friday's show. And, you know, this is the short version on all of these. And feel free to email me or social media, connect with me, anybody who wants to go deeper on these topics. If there's interest, I'll go deeper. So how do you develop a company mission statement? So I would say, like, when you are starting out, you're launching your company or you're going to be a company of one, you're a solopreneur, I wouldn't sweat the details. You don't really need an official written mission statement as long as you know your why. Like, why are you doing all of this? And for some of you, it might be because I want to make $1 million. I want to be independently wealthy. I mean, that was sort of my mission in my 20s. Now, I've talked about that was the wrong mission to have. I didn't know that, but that was my mission for a while. And it worked, but it had a downside. Maybe you want to, you know, help people with whatever your business is. Maybe you're a video game designer. You just want to bring joy and fun into people's lives. I think as long as you know, like, why are you doing this? Because entrepreneurship is not for the weak of heart. Like, you will fail, you will fumble, you will be challenged. So what's going to be that inner desire that pushes you through that? And I would say that even as you grow a little bit, what to me, even more important than a mission statement is your BHAG, what Jim Collins coined the term big, hairy, audacious goal. Like, what is a goal that's 5 to 10 years or 20 years away that is so big, so audacious, so crazy that literally your neighbors think you're crazy. People think it's impossible. You know, it's got to be that big. It's got to be aspirational because you need it to motivate you. You need a giant dream to attract partners and customers and employees. The example I use often is, you know, Coca-Cola, big company, their BHAG is 2020 vision. You know, every Coca-Cola employee, their massive company, everybody throughout the world that works for Coke knows what 2020 vision means. It means they're going to double their revenue 2020 by the year 2020. Now, this BHAG happens to be about revenue. It happens to be a number specific thing. It doesn't have to be. And anybody in any leadership level at Coke, they know there's 2020 vision, and then right beneath it is like the five or six P's. Like, oh, we're going to double our revenue by the year 2020 with a focus on people and product and positioning. And, you know, I can't do them all myself. When I was at the company Conexa, the CEO, Rudy Carson, he had a BHAG. I don't know if we called it a BHAG. I think we did. Of 100 million. And he was a little vague about whether that was 100 million in revenue or 100 million valuation. But he was talking about, I'm pretty sure it was revenue. You know, he was talking about being a $100 million a year company. Back when I joined, he bought my company and they were doing, I don't know, $20 million. I mean, after I was there for a while, we were doing 35. But I mean, it was really quite crazy. Nobody could really see how we were going to get to that goal. The punchline, of course, is that they burst through that goal. I had left that company, but then about 5 years after I left, you know, they were doing over $100 million in revenue and sold to IBM for, I think it was $1.3 or $1.5 billion. So, you know, LeadX is a one-year-old company. I started it 1 year ago. We now have about, you know, six full-time employees and a handful of contractors. And we talk about our mission is sort of the vague version is, you know, we're all about democratizing leadership, you know, convincing people that everybody is a leader at work and at home, and that brings good things. We want to help you. You know, we want to democratize leadership. That's why we're doing free training every single day. But what I think about more often, and what you'll see even in our marketing stuff, is more about our BHAG. We are going to spark intentional leadership over the next 10 years in 100 million people. So it, to us, it's very specific. It's a number. In 10 years, 100 million people. That's our BHAG. And so Marcelo and everyone out there, you know, whether it's for your startup company, your small business, or even yourself, you know, think about a personal BHAG or even a personal mission. You know, my personal mission that I reflect on each day, it aligns and overlaps with the company mission. To me, I can boil it down into a word, which is potential. And officially, my personal mission is to provide life-changing hope and help to people who want to achieve their full potential. And that's evolved over several years. It sounds very simple, but it used to be about helping people. And then I added the word hope and help. And it used to just be provide help to people. But then I realized that's pretty hard. And a lot of people, they don't want your help. They don't want to achieve their full potential. So it's got to be helping people who want it. So I've evolved this statement over several years. But as I'm recording this, I'm looking at the written statement taped to the bottom of my monitor. I think about as part of my morning routine, this personal mission statement. So I stay on purpose and I feel like I've had a good day if I've helped even one person or given hope to even one person. So anyway, that is my thoughts on like company mission statement, BHAG, or even personal mission statement. And when it comes to values, how do you decide what values and culture your business should have? Again, if you're a brand new startup or you're a solopreneur, don't get hung up on values too much. Values in the early days come from the values, the style of the founder. So the way you make decisions, the way you act, what you care about most, what you value, you know, this is already baked into you. Now, for your first 10 hires, your first 10 employees, the culture evolves naturally and will be an extension of you or you and your co-founders. So it's because you will naturally hire people that have a cultural fit, even if you're not trying. Now, this isn't so much in a negative way, like we're all going to have groupthink. I only want to hire people that think exactly like me. No, you know, if I move fast and am adventurous and very open to trying things and risk taking, I'm naturally going to like that kind of a personality. You know, if there's three people that I'm evaluating for a role and there's two introverts and one massive extrovert and I'm a massive extrovert, I'm probably going to pick the extrovert and this kind of full out, you know, this full tilt approach to life and business will be automatically in my new hires. If you have co-founders, then it will become a mix. Where you need to sort of, well, let me back up and say, values, once you start hiring people, they're practically speaking the way people behave when you're not around. So how are they going to work? What, with what intensity? How are they going to make decisions when you're not around? And so, you know, when it's 0 to 10 employees, again, it's the founder and, you know, her direct reports, it's going to be almost organic. When you have more than 10 employees, well, now you're going to have a layer of management because you don't want to be managing more than 10 employees yourself as the founder, as the CEO or president. So now you need to make sure that your managers are hiring and training and reinforcing the values that you want. And again, there's no one right way. You can Google, you know, on values, and some companies and people like, you know, all these crazy words or words that are used, like everybody wants great service, everybody, you know, has integrity and all that. I encourage you, it's not so much the word itself, than the example you use in the written statement and the example you use every day yourself. And there are some, I encourage you to use unique and hard values. You know, at Conexa, you know, one of our values was growth and profits. And that might sound weird, like, geez, you know, that's so warm and fuzzy. A cold-hearted company letting us know in our face that they care about revenue and profits. But what Rudy used to say, and then I would say it as well, so this is how he passed the value on to me, is, you know, the purpose of the business wasn't profits. That's not the purpose. Just like the purpose of your life isn't to breathe, but you need to breathe to live and to then fulfill your mission and purpose. Without profits, a company will die. Without growth, a company will die. So to be overt about that up front, I liked it. It was like telling new hires, listen, especially in this, you know, crazy day and age where there are people that will raise venture capital or whatever and then just spend it like it's free money and not really care about getting to profitability. The only thing that will guarantee that your company won't go bankrupt is a positive cash flow and generally profitability. So letting people know, hey, you know, if we're going to veto some expense, or we're not going to let you buy that fancy computer, or we're going to make you travel coach class instead of first class, or stay at a Marriott instead of a Ritz-Carlton, it's because one of our values is growth and profit and just being upfront about that. But again, I wouldn't sweat it too much in the early days. I think values are organic. So the final question is, how do you develop a business plan? Okay, now this is interesting. You know, the classic old school business plans were these, I don't know, you know, 20, 30, 40, 100 page documents of all these business details. And largely those have gone out of favor because the world is moving so fast. It's ridiculous to think that you can predict your business a year from now or 5 years from now. So to have like this multi-year plan is kind of crazy. And in fact, as the world of entrepreneurship has moved into what they call sort of a lean methodology, everybody views things as experiments. So your first 90 days, year, whatever is kind of viewed as like, we are trying to come up with a minimum viable product, an MVP, and then we're going to look for product market fit. So we don't really know exactly what that product's going to look like. We don't exactly know who our target audience is going to look like. We really can't predict sales and profits and headcount, you know, 2 years from now. But having said all that, you know, what is helpful is to try to do the 3 to 5 year plan, knowing that reality is going to look very different, just because the exercise of thinking it through will make you a better leader, a better business person. And I think if you're looking to raise money from venture capitalists or people like that, they know your business plan's a bunch of crap. I mean, it's not going to hold true, but they want to know that you know how to think about sales and profits and all those levers. They want to know you can think through a business model. Now, practically speaking, now this is going to get really practical. So get ready to pause and take notes or just, you know, come back to this part of the interview. What most startups should do, and this is exactly what I do, is I always start with a one-page business plan. So if you Google Lean Startup Canvas, L-E-A-N, Lean Startup Canvas, C-A-N-V-A-S, you're going to find some websites. There's one, I think, ranking high from a company called strategizer.com. And it's a little template. It's like a business plan on a page. You know, who is your audience? What's your distribution channel? What's your value proposition? You know, what are all the key levers? And it, again, summarizes everything because the details are going to change, but it's like anybody that you hand this plan to, this one-page plan, will be able to, at a glance, say, okay, I understand what business you're in, where you're adding value, who your customers are. I get it. And it's very, it's still not easy to get it right. And the whole lean step is that you then iterate in each of these boxes, you know, just getting the fit just right. And everything is an experiment. So I have found this one page process to be very valuable. Now, beyond that, if you actually are going to try to go for venture capital or angel funding or even a friends and family round or looking for strategic partners or a bank loan, they're going to want more than the one page plan. And so then what you want is a pitch deck. And again, I have found with LeadX, I self-funded for the full first year and we just now are finishing up a friends and family seed round. And so I went and created a pitch deck. This is just a PowerPoint document that tells about your business, you know, in, I don't know, 12 to 20 slides, let's say. And the best thing you can do is just Google pitch deck examples or sample pitch decks. And you're going to find, you know, right up on the internet to look at, you know, great pitch decks from companies like Uber and Airbnb and, you know, all kinds of startups. And whatever business you have, you can always say like pitch deck example SaaS software or mobile app or daycare center or whatever it is. And you might find some example pitch decks. And, you know, usually they're pretty well designed. They're really beautiful to look at, but they kind of follow that same pattern. You know, how big, what's the problem you're addressing? What is your unique solution? How big is the market? How are you going to sell it? You know, is it come people walking in through a retail store or an online store or through resellers? What's the pricing? What's the cost? So we know what kind of profits look like. What's the competition? They all have kind of the same 12 to 20 slides. So I think after you do your one pager, you could do your pitch deck. And when it comes to actually running your business, what I have found to be pure gold is it's similar to the Lean Startup Canvas, but it's basically a one page strategic plan that gets you through the quarter. So 90 day sprints. 1 year is too long. So if you Google Gazelle's one page strategic plan, Gazelle's like the animal, G-A-Z-E-L-L-E-S. Gazelle's is the company from my friend and great consultant, Vern Harnish. If you're not familiar with Vern's work, go get his, you know, gazelles.com, get on his email list, pure gold, buy his book called The Rockefeller Habits, pure gold. And you can download this one page strategic plan that again forces priorities. So I run the business on 90 day sprints. What's the most important, you know, 1, 2, 3 things we're going to do for marketing, for product development, etc. So that's it. I think as you're thinking about a business plan, I wouldn't really worry about that big old document until someone's insisting they want one. I've never used one. I've never had one. I've never seen one in 20 years, but start with the Lean Startup Canvas, then put together a full pitch deck. And when it comes time to actually run your business, do it in 90-day plans and go get the one-page strategic plan from Gazelle's. And to put just a quick personal spin on this, you know, the people I know in their personal lives who do the best, they do 90-day plans for their life too. So we're talking about New Year's planning, goals for the year. If you really want to increase your odds of success, take your one-year goal. I'm going to pay off $10,000 of debt. I'm going to lose 20 pounds, whatever it is, and break it into quarterly goals. Okay, 90 days from now, I will weigh 5 pounds less. I will have paid off $2,500. I will have written 50 pages of my novel. You know, whatever your personal goal is, turn it into 90-day goals and break it down, you know, even further from there. hopefully you'll find value in this. If you're a business person, I mean, I've really given you some great resources there. So hey, let's wrap things up. What's coming up next week? I start to teach on the Mondays how to have great one-on-one meetings. That's part of our new Monday is for Managers program. And then I interview a pastor of a 25,000 person church out of Arizona, a guy named Luke Barnett. And he talks about kind of having like God-sized goals, God-sized vision. And for those of you who, you know, are really religious and look to put God into your life and goals, you are going to love this episode. And even if you're more secular, there is great inspiration here in terms of, you know, the size of your goal attracting people. And Luke, it's funny. I mean, he talks about like he literally fasted on seeds and nuts and stuff for, I can't remember how long, but up on a mountain, you know, to get his vision. I mean, just really a fascinating story and to hear about his process and his, you know, crazy success. Maura Aarons Millay, author of Hiding in the Bathroom, a great book and a great interview all about how I'm a massive introvert, how us introverts can still be successful. You know, we can still be ambitious and high achievers, even if we're introverts. And then our Throwback Thursdays with Dr. Stan Beecham. And then we're going to be back with another weekly wrap up. So as we wind out this amazing year where we launched the LeadX podcast, launched the LeadX show, launched the company itself, launched the LeadX Academy, I hope you're having an amazing year yourself and are as excited for next year as I am. Don't forget, go to leadx.org to check out our free course of the day. And if you think it's good, go tell all your manager friends at work. Don't you want them to get a little bit better? And I will ask you for your help. As I've discussed, I'm on a mission to spark 100 million intentional leaders over the next 10 years. Your example will inspire others. Leadership is influence. You lead at home, at work, you lead your family, you lead strangers who are around you, who are watching you. Leadership is influence. So you need to be mindful of your influence. The question for you is, how will you lead today?